good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair from the Gene Boss Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting to you live, unscripted, and unrehearsed from the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band. If you are able to hear us broadcast with, I believe, 5 watts, which does not reach down into the valleys of Vashon. But you can always stream me live on voiceofvashon.org. And I am listened to all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world all the way around, halfway around the world, to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital. And all of Captain Joe's people and all of the ships and stations and aircraft in between. And it is my greetings to all of you today on a kind of brisk day on the magical isle, where we even had a little bit of snow this morning. The binnacle list this week has for me personally a bit of sadness, more than a bit of sadness. Mary R.'s sister is on her last voyage, and within days or weeks, we never know, of course. It is not given to us to know the day nor the hour, but it is my hope and my wish that Anne's crossing of the bar, when it happens, will be an easy one, a gentle crossing, and so, for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, it is my weekly wish and hope and command that each of you follow the instructions of your medical practitioner, so that, because it is not time, it is not your time, certainly not mine. A couple of things that I said last week, I need to make some corrections for. The number of mistakes that I allow myself in each quarter, that number is one, had now been far exceeded. And in the piece that I talked last week about the about fishing, I used the term long line with regard to the way that tuna was caught by using poles and lines off of the pole in a very large gang hook. And when that hook would hit the water in where the tuna was schooling, after having been chummed with anchoveta, the tuna would hit the hook without having to have it baited. Anyway, I used the term long line. I should have used the word hand line, because long line in the terminology of fishing has a quite different connotation. Today, for example, Japanese fish using long lines. Those long lines can be as long as 2 or 3 miles. And spaced out along that line are lines that go hang down from it and have hooks on them. And the fish hit the hooks, and then the fishing boat hauls it back. That's what a long line is. The other one was that I usually play when my broadcast is up on the archive, I play it to see if there are any things that I need to correct or that I could have done better. And parenthetical insertion here, I do not like my own radio voice, and in particular do I not like it now being amended by this respiratory thing, which is still hanging on just a little bit. So in the broadcast, I used the term forenoon watch, which is the watch from 8 o'clock, 0800 in the morning until noon, when I should have used the term afternoon watch. The afternoon watch is the watch from noon until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I bet you that none of you know that at one time I was addressed as Reverend Joe Wubold. And I came across this in going through some things from my past and from Mary R's past. I'm trying to do a little bit of consolidation, trying to do a little bit of thinning out, a little bit of rousing out, cleaning and restowing gear lockers, especially the DC locker. You shipboard types know exactly what that is. I used to write that in my inspection reports after I do my weekly inspection. Rouse out, clean, and restow a particular locker. Well, I've been trying to do some rousing out, cleaning, and restowing. And I came across some things that go all the way back to my childhood. My childhood spanned World War II. And I lived with my mother, and at that time I had just the one sister in Annandale, Virginia, which is now a bedroom community for Washington and Arlington. And when I was during the war, when I was about 8, I was a student at the Catholic grade school in Falls Church, Virginia, at St. James. And St. James is still there. In those days, the school was taught by holy nuns from the Order of Immaculate Heart of Mary. Absolutely wonderful, wonderful women. And the mission of that particular order was teaching. It was a teaching order. And when Lent comes, Lent is the period before Easter, the 40 days before Easter. When Lent comes, the custom in the pre-Vatican II church was that every child was expected to put money, put pennies or nickels, usually no more than a nickel, into a little box. And this box was called a Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Box. I will not try to construct the acronym for that. And so I did not have my own, and somehow or other I'd missed the distribution in school of the Lenten of my personal Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Box. This was, I think, I was in the third grade. And this was, of course, the days before the internet where you could go on and find just about anything that you wanted to buy. Somehow or other, I found a religious supply store. I did not check to see whether it was a Catholic religious supply store. I just saw that it was a place where you could buy such things as Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Boxes. And so I ordered one. And my mother, who was always, my mother, first of all, whose nickname in the family was Toots. Toots was a convert to Roman Catholicism. She converted when she married my father. And so, but she always had a healthy skepticism about some of the things that went on with the pre-Vatican II church. And so she was skeptical as to what was going to happen with the small donations that that happened in Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Boxes. So anyway, she helped me fill out the order form, and a small amount of money was included in the envelope, and off it went. A parcel, not very long later, came addressed to Reverend Joe Wubold. And inside this parcel was a Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Box. I tried to get myself off of the mailing list, but then, as now, once you are on somebody's mailing list, it's almost impossible to get off of it. So for probably 3 or 4 years after that, I was addressed in my family as Reverend Joe Wubold, and I do not want Reverend Joe Wubold to replace Captain Joe, because I earned the right to be called Captain Joe. I certainly had not earned the right to be called Reverend Joe, And in any case, I still do not make any further contributions in a Lenten Daily Self-Denial Offering Box. Coming up now is a public service announcement, and this has to do with cats. All of you who are faithful and constant listeners know that, first of all, I own two cats myself, Sailor and Ellery, and both of them are indoor-outdoor cats. And all of you know also that my friends of family rank and neighbors are Scott and Michelle. Scott, Dr. Phillips, and Michelle. And Michelle is the one who owns the string of kitty vending machines that we have here on the magical Isle of Vashon. I've been over the house several times in the last few days and was impressed by the number of kitties that Michelle has in stock in the house. And there are a number of reasons for this which are beyond the scope of both the time and the general interest that we have here. But maybe it's time, maybe some of these can be moved on because they're all of them eligible for adoption. And so Michelle wrote for me a little blurb, and I'm going to read it because it is both interesting, because those of you who are cat people have cats, will be interested in how this is working. And those of you who do not have cats and should are now being given a golden opportunity to have a selection presented to you, and in a particular one that I would take, except for two reasons. And the first, and her name is Holly. And I would take Holly, and Holly has applied for residence with me several times when I've been over at the house. And there are two reasons why I would not and cannot take Holly. First of all, she has to be an inside cat. And I just cannot have a cat that I, just like me, I have to be free. And so all the cats that I have and all the cats that I have had since I've lived on the island have been indoor, outdoor cats. That's the first reason. The second reason is that Holly has a tendency to be somewhat domineering. And I already have a head cat, and that's Sailor. I command the peaceable kingdom, and I cannot have any discord come into the peaceable kingdom. So Holly is available, and here is what Michelle has written. She says, Michelle, along with her foster friends, have older kittens and several adult cats ready for adoption. Before adoption, all cats are spayed or neutered, dewormed, vaccinated, microchipped, and polished to a high sheen, as well as being run through a car wash. Spotlight on Holly Grayling. Holly and Grayling both are types of butterflies. I did not know that, Michelle. An effervescent, engaging, and fearless personality wrapped in a coat of gray and white, Holly is a petite 5-year girl who happens to be a polydactyl, also affectionately known as Hemingway cats. I think that means that they have an extra toe. Holly charges through life and makes us laugh, and she certainly does that. I really like her a lot. Rather than be held, she prefers to explore and chirp at birds, although when sleepy, she loves to cuddle. As long as she is in charge. Now, this is it right here. There is only one captain in the peaceable kingdom at captain's quarters, and there is only one sailor, and he's the one that's in charge. Holly gets along with most cats most of the time. The ideal home for Holly would be energetic with kids and dogs and cats who stay out of her personal space. Strictly indoor cat. To see photos and videos of Holly and to contact Michelle about adoption, and here it is. This is where you need your pencil and your paper. Go to Pet Finders and search for Holly Grayling. Pet Finders is PetFinders, all one word, and it is petfinder.com. And there you will see a photograph of Holly Grayling. She's an absolutely beautiful cat. And if she would change her ways and be somewhat submissive and also could become an indoor-outdoor cat, then I would be happy to have her. But neither of those conditions can prevail. So If you need a cat, and I recommend that if you need one, you really need two, then go to petfinder.com and a lot more information. And I'm sure that if Holly is not your cup of vodka, then you can go and find somebody else. This year, for the first time in several years, we are going to have the low tide celebration, which I've headed up for many, many years. We had to not have it because of the virus. It will be out at Point Robinson Light Station. We're settling formally the date, but I am almost sure that it will be on the 2nd of June when we have a really good low tide. And it is a great event. We have people from off island as well as on island, and we have beach naturalists that take especially children out to the tidal flats off of Point Robinson Light Station. And they get muddy and dirty. Each child is entitled to bring 5 pounds of sand into the Point Robinson Lighthouse, and almost every kid does that. So I'll be talking more about that because from the captain's chair is going to be the official voice of the low tide celebration. And we've got a lot of interesting people that are involved in this and a lot of people who really care about the island and care about children and care about the wildlife. I mentioned last week that I would be talking about something that I had coming up, but I didn't get to it, so I'm getting to it now. I'm going to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in June. I'm planning to broadcast from the Coast Guard Air Station at Traverse City, Michigan. For those of you who have never been to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, I urge you to make a place in your heart and in your time to do it. Traverse City, of course, is not on the Upper Peninsula. It's on the thumb of, it's on Grand Traverse Bay. There is a Coast Guard Air Station there. It's a Coast Guard town. And so, and some of Captain Joe's people are there, people that worked for me when I was the commander up in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And part of this expedition is that we're going to go up to the Sioux, and I'm going to retrace some of my adventures. I am an honorary citizen of the city of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. That was my parting gift from the city when I was relieved at the end of my tour. It is a part of the world and people that I think are just wonderful. I thought about retiring there, but when I realized I'd broken ice for one full winter with my much-loved North Wind, and the winters up there are brutal, and I just did not want to go back and endure winters. And of course, I could have snowbirded, I could have gone south, I could have gone all the way down to, well, Traverse City on the other side of the Straits of Mackinac. Anyway, I will be doing that, and I'm mentioning it now because I'm making all the bookings now and because I want everybody to put on their calendar to listen up for one of my peripatetic programs. From the Naval Institute this morning came a very disturbing article about a report which was written by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And it talks about the Russian Arctic threat. And it is a pessimistic article in the sense that it also reminds everybody that the United States' presence in the Arctic is so thin on the water right now that should a threat be directed towards us, that threat would have to be countered by some pretty small forces. There is now a 11th, there is, an infantry division now stationed in Alaska. But when it comes to the water side, We would have to depend on our allies. And one of our allies, of course, is Norway. Another one is Finland. And another one is Sweden. And Sweden and Finland both have applied for membership in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And so we would be depending on them to cover our six, to watch our six, as well as whatever forces we could get, which would be Polar Star and Healy right now. So I will continue to watch this, but I find this to be a particularly disturbing study by a very influential and highly respected and regarded center, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I want every American to be aware of the Arctic because we are an Arctic power, and that it is also the shortest distance should the Russians decide that they're going to lob missiles at us coming across the Arctic. There are all sorts of things that we need to be paying much better attention to. Talking about the Russians in the Antarctic, this time from another one of my trusted sources, G. Captain, a Russian research vessel has docked recently in Cape Town in South Africa. This Russian research vessel is apparently carrying out, in particular, seismic explorations for minerals. And, of course, when they say minerals, what we're really talking about is oil. Back in 1998, the Antarctic Treaty was amended to forbid even the exploration for oil within the Antarctic Treaty region, which begins at 60 South. Russia is a signatory to the Antarctic Treaty. It is one of the great satisfactions of my life that I had a small part in the enforcement of the Antarctic Treaty. And then when I became both a student and then working at the Scott Polar Research Institute, I had the privilege of working for and with Dr. John Heap, a companion of the Order of Saints Michael and George, CMG after his name. And John was one of the builders of the Antarctic Treaty, and he was the author of the Antarctic Treaty Handbook. And I was privileged to be able to work with him and on some treaty matters, and also to be his friend. And that was a friendship that lasted all the way until his death, and now in memory. And every time that I have something to say about the Antarctic, and in particular the treaty, I miss my friend Dr. John Heap. I saw John's widow Peg when I was in Cambridge in November for the 100th birthday of Scott Polar Research Institute. And I'll be going back later on this year for some more events. But the thing that is really of concern to me is, first of all, the Russians are now starting to do serious investigations and exploration. My concern is that this is not only a violation of the Antarctic Treaty, to which Russia is a signatory, but it is also is this a signal the Russians are sending that flags in the air, we're thinking about pulling out of the Antarctic Treaty? The coldest place on Earth is Vostok Station, which is one of the Russian stations. It is it's around the corner from the U.S. base at McMurdo. And the Russians and the Americans have worked in happy harmony down on the ice and have done this through the worst times of the Cold War. It would break my heart if Russia decided to pull out of the Antarctic Treaty and to then start doing some serious drilling. And I do not know. The treaty itself has almost no enforcement mechanism, because when it was constructed, it was believed that this was such a good piece of diplomacy, and it was, and it is, that no enforcement would be necessary or even possible. So, as with so many other things in life that I promise you I'm going to keep track of and keep reporting to you on, this is something that should be of concern to all of us, and I'm making it your concern by reassuring you that it is my concern. In response to my piece last week about the uniform, which is coming my way from the beach patrol, one of Captain Joe's people sent me a collection of photographs of the beach patrol, and John is also one of my friends on the Coast Guard channel, which I've got to get back onto. I dropped out of the channel for a short period of time when I wasn't up to doing much more than climbing up in the chair and do my broadcast. So, but anyway, John sent me a collection of photographs, and there's a wonderful photograph of a young beach patrol who is wearing a helmet and I am sure that they are Coast Guard issue, what will we call them, jodhpurs, the kind of pants that horsey folk wear, and boots and spurs, and a sword belt. It looks to me like a sword belt. If you look at a photograph of General George Patton, he is always wearing a belt that has it looks like a gilt buckle. And that's a sword belt. I have one that holds all of the accoutrements that go with a dress sword. And this young man is wearing what looks to me like a sword belt. And he's painfully, painfully young. We were all that young once. Some of us in our hearts. All of Captain Joe's people are young at heart. It's one of the requirements for continued and happy membership. Anyway, John, many thanks for the photographs. There's also one showing many, many horses. And this leads me to wonder whether the horse patrol, I need to do a little bit more research on this, because it looks to me as if maybe there were complete squadrons of horses, or whatever groups of horses are called, not herds. Herds are when they're out running around loose. What are they called when they are being ridden by young Coast Guardsmen who are patrolling the beach? So that's my list of things. My book today is called Conquest of the Ocean. It's by Brian Lavery. I've talked about Brian before. Brian is the emeritus, and I'm not sure he's even still alive. I hope he is, because he was a wonderful, wonderful author. He did about 30 books on the history of the sea, and the Conquest of the Oceans is the one that I picked because it has a wonderful part in it called the Battle of the Atlantic. The U.S. Coast Guard was very much a part of the Battle of the Atlantic. In fact, my much-loved ship Ingham, which is still afloat, was one of the ships in the Battle of the Atlantic. She had, to her credit, at least one sub, one German sub. So here we go, 1,300 two bells of the afternoon watch. And I have to say once again that I had a whole list of other stuff that I wanted to cover. We'll get to next week. In the meantime, this is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And watch for all of those people for whom you are responsible and accountable, who are part of your particular and personal command. Watch their six. Take good care of them. Take good care of yourself, because if you don't, you won't be able to take care of anybody else. And this is your Captain Joe, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly.